Welcome back to Spartan Up the Podcast. We are your hosts in Grit and Resilience, and each week we bring you the best possible minds we can. So subscribe to YouTube, and then you can follow along with us as we meet these extraordinary people. I'm Sephra Alexandra. This is the founder of Spartan, Joe DeSena. And this week we're sitting down with one of Joe's favorite people in his van, Josh Crosby.
Yeah, this guy's an animal. I've gotten to know him over the past few years. Got to the Olympic level of rowing at a very young age. So he started to learn these very principles we've talked about for 5+ years here and just embodies Spartan. He drove his van to come see us at West Point during one of our races. And I had all the kids wake up like at 5 a.m. with Colonel Nye, and we attacked the van. I mean, we started shaking it, pounding on it. We scared the blank out of them. And then we sat down and we did this interview. Actually, we did a big workout first, and then we did the interview. So it's a lot of fun. I think there are tremendous takeaways, no matter if you're, you know, a mom, if you're a Marine, if you're building a business, this guy's got the goods. Yeah. So stick with us. Listen to it. Take some notes, and then at the end, we are going to highlight the stuff that really should punch you in the face for the rest of your life in a good way.
Great way.
When I'm on the road, this is my home, my man cave, my, you know, den of despair, my surf mobile, the body squad mobile. It gets a lot done.
I'm out of breath. Hang on. That was a hell of a workout.
Yeah, that was a shocker to the system after doing much swimming and running lately for this swim run I was training for. So that was painful. You saw the burpees and the push-ups were pretty pathetic.
I cheated a bit, right? Because I chose an exercise that I like. If you put us in a boat.
Yeah. So when I got to my second choice and I knew that the other guys were probably going to pick upper body, I doubled down on the legs.
When you doubled down on the legs, I was annoyed. I was annoyed about that. Smart competitive move.
Yeah, in rowing you always have to sense when the other boat might be a little bit in despair, and if you are, you have to go at that point because you're going to get no other shot. So it's always funny how that works.
So you and I know each other now about a year or 2 years. About a year. And I don't know. You're just a super likable guy. I've been sending everybody I know. You got to go meet Josh. He's awesome.
My favorite is when I get texts from you saying, hey, you two need to meet. And and it's just a bunch of numbers. And I'm like, okay, is this Susie? Is it John? Like, who are you? And then every time I meet the person, they're amazing. And
you were a rower.
Yeah, I started as a rower. Kind of interesting story because my grandpa and my dad threw me in a boat. They rowed recreationally. They were in the first ever head of the Charles back in 1965, I think it was. There were 60 people in that race, and now there's like 10,000. So it's a pretty cool story. They got me going.
How old?
I was 9, but
so you grew up in the Boston area?
Yeah, outside of Boston, Manchester, Mass, and then went on the Charles. Then I did my first race at 11 for fun, and then 13 for another one, and then when I was 16, I went away to a boarding school, and that's where my dad was begging me just to try rowing there, and I wanted to play lacrosse. The funny thing is I'm a horrible hand-eye coordinated guy, and everybody knew it except for me that was not going to work, and my dad just said, give it 2 weeks, and then you can go back to lacrosse. And so I literally did 2 days of dry land training, and I was hooked. And it was similar stuff to what we were just doing and just punishing yourself, and the camaraderie was amazing. And
so, yeah, what hooked you about it? It was exactly that? It was the hard work and the camaraderie?
Yeah, camaraderie. The coach was super inspirational. It was this guy named Chip Morgan. He was a quiet leader. One of those guys with minimal praise, but when you got it, it was like gold.
It was a big deal.
Yeah, and I just loved it. And then when I got on the water, the feeling of moving that boat as one team, even though it's 9 people in the boat, 1 steering and 8 rowing, that was, I think, it really got me. And then just pushing your body outermost limits.
When they study rowers, what are VO2 max look like? I'm just wondering, because I told you, I met a couple of gold medalists, and he said, we just destroy our bodies. And I wonder how that compares to other sports.
Yeah, I do know that rowers and cross-country skiers and swimmers are kind of like the top of the VO2. I can't remember my number specifically, but I know there was guys in the sevens, and I think I was 6.7, or I actually can't remember. I remember not being psyched with mine. Like it was like the SAT scores for rowing.
Sure.
And so they would all come back, and you'd kind of be like, oh, I'm not getting into this school, oh, shoot, I have a chance, but so mine was solid, but not the best.
Not the best.
No.
And so then what happens? Because as parents, we're all trying to push our kids, right? And as leaders, we're trying to push our teams. And everything we read now and listen to on podcasts says somebody great has the desire, but also the talent. You didn't have the talent. You didn't have the talent with lacrosse.
No, hockey and lacrosse.
You didn't have the talent, no. And so did you find something where you had the desire and the talent, or it sounds like?
Yeah, I mean, rowing. That's where the kind of the perfect combination came together, where everything lined up. Where, you know, I was able to match that my skill set of understanding how to kind of move the oar and train the body, and then the mental side of it just lined up with who I was.
The mental side of it, I saw this morning when we were training. Like, will you just keep going till you, like, you have examples of where you just go till you collapse?
Yeah, that's kind of my MO, and I do that with business too. It's like I get set on something and I go, and a lot of people I think would have cashed it in, but. And sometimes that's the right thing to do. I'm not saying it's always, I like to, yeah. The adventure racing was probably the best example of that, where I moved into adventure racing after rowing, and you just had to keep going, and there was no way out. You've talked about this before, where it's like no plan B. A lot of times in these races, there's no plan B because you got your team that if you drop out, they have to drop out, and that's the same thing with rowing too. If everybody's not pulling together and focused on that same goal and giving 100%, the boat's not going to perform the way it should.
So you're getting pulled in those moments, and I remember it in adventure racing, you're exactly right. In those moments where you're exhausted and you can't take another step, your team is pulling you. You don't want to let them down.
Yeah. I mean, they're either literally pulling you. That was something that we used as we call it the workhorse, would pull somebody else to help move the team faster. But in moments of despair, even the workhorse would get in trouble. And you would either literally or figuratively pull each other along.
Yeah. I mean, we've done some amazing interviews where we talk to people about this idea of having your own personal board of directors, people around you that are doing exactly that are pulling. This morning, you were pulling me, right? I didn't want to do those lunges.
Yeah, and in business, you're pulling me.
No.
I'm looking at you and what you've done, and I go, okay,
listen,
keep going.
Spartan is 20 years in the making, 15 years of which we lost money.
Yeah.
So, like, don't look at it and say, oh, you know, this guy's got some magic. There's no magic sauce.
I don't think that. I just think I see perseverance and persistence and passion all coming together. So
just keep working at it. All right. So you row, and you become pretty good at it. What were you? You were like a state champ or something? What were
the big turning point was getting selected to go to the junior national team tryouts.
Well, how old were you?
So I was 17, about to turn 18 in the summer, and 50 people from around the country got invited to this one camp at Cornell, your hot spot. And
Cayuga Lake?
Yep. We rode out of the Cornell Boathouse and bunked in there. But I was the last guy to get invited. And my coach from St. Paul's school where I rode said, I don't know why I have to be so persistent. You need to invite this guy. And that was the guy who said very little, Chip Morgan.
Really?
So he basically told off the national team coach. I got an invite. I was the slowest rowing machine scorer to be invited. So on the rowing machine, I was the worst by far. And I showed up. I had this big backpack on.
Scary?
Oh, yeah. Scared as hell. I walk in.
You know there's going to be 50 competitors there? Like
50 of the best in the country. And there's 6 coxswains, the guys who steer the boat, sitting on the couch playing, or 5 of them, playing Nintendo or whatever it was back then. And they go, they see me walk in the boathouse. They go, oh, shit, that makes 6 of us. And I look over, looking at these coxswains going, what are you talking about? I'm a rower, guys.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
every day they put a writing on the wall of who was staying, who was going, and we had to race each day. It's called seat racing, where you race against others and get switched in the boat. And
so
I made
before
it.
The end of the day, did you know, or you're sweating every day looking
no,
at the board?
No, you know if you won. You know if you won your races that day,
right.
But. Yeah, so if you finish winning your races, it was clear you're going to be there the next day. If you tied one and won one, and you know you weren't really sure, but then we ended up going on to the World Championships.
Oh, wait, how many kids leave?
So 50 invited and 12 make it.
Wow. Yeah. All right, so you're one of the 12.
I was one of the top. Yeah, and then I made the top 8, and then I set the rhythm for the boat, the stroke. That's where with my size I was able to make a difference, where I set the rhythm, efficient rhythm, know when to make a move on somebody else.
So for those out there that listened to or read Boys in the Boat, who were you equivalent to?
Because there
was a smaller guy
in that
story.
I was a smaller guy. Now I should know it by heart, but I set the rhythm. I think it was the main guy. Maybe he was 4C.
Talk in the book. They talk about, I think his name was Joe.
Yeah, Joe.
Joe was big and lanky, but then there was a small guy.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby.
I was definitely Bobby then.
Yeah, you were Bobby.
I was tiny. I mean, everybody, when I walked around with these guys, they're all 6'2", 6'4", 190 to 220. And
This is like the David and Goliath story.
Yeah. Well, it got better because we went to the Junior World Championships,
yeah.
And we raced the Germans and the Russians, and we were like cast away out in lane 6, thinking that we wouldn't have a shot, and we ended up winning. And one of the coolest moments was being handed the German shirt from the guy who was 6'4", 200 pounds. Like,
and the shirt went around your ankles?
Yeah, it went to my ankles. It's my nightgown.
That's an awesome – I mean, that is basically Boys in the Boat. That's the story, right? Well, they go up against the big,
I mean,
mean,
yeah, that's an incredible
Europeans.
Story. If you haven't read it or – yeah. And I'm hoping they make a movie out of it someday because they wrote the screenplay. I worked with a guy who wrote the screenplay. I trained him as a rower to kind of experience what it felt like to do 2,000 meters. And then they sold it, but it's sitting on a shelf somewhere. So
we got to get that. So then, so you, big moment, right? You win the jersey.
Yeah.
Then what?
Then it was off to recruiting town, which was awesome. I mean, you can't be in a better spot as a rower to win the Junior Worlds as a junior in high school, because then senior year, you're getting recruited. And
where'd you go?
I went to Brown University.
Nice. So you weren't that smart. It was the rowing?
There's something called the academic index, and I just passed it. So,
nice.
So I went to Brown. I didn't want to be a lightweight rower in college because they have heavyweight and lightweight and rower. Lightweights are 160 or under. Heavyweights are obviously bigger, and I just was convinced that I was a heavyweight, and I didn't want to get pigeoned into a lightweight program. So I went to just a heavyweight program at Brown. I remember my freshman coach, Scott Roop, said to me, freshman fall, he's like, he sounds like Gilbert Godfrey. He's like, yeah, Josh, how big's your dad? And I'm like, 6'1", 190. He's like, yeah, keep eating. So I ate 6,000 calories a day, still look like this. And all right, that might piss some people off. But yeah, I couldn't get bigger. And I just,
how'd you do in college?
College freshman year was amazing. We were undefeated and won the Henley Royal Regatta, which is a big regatta over in England. 68 crews in there, and we went over as little freshmen and beat up on some older dudes. And then all 5 boats that year at Brown were undefeated, the varsity, second varsity.
Wow.
So it was in a magical year. And
was it coaching? What was it?
Coaching, camaraderie, the team. I always go back to team. I mean, it's so supportive and competitive within our team that we just raise it up. So something that we always that I've learned from is something that we came up with freshman year, the team did, called MOD, margin of day, and it became like, not if we were going to win, we were confident we would. It was how much can we win by. So even if you have a 5-second lead, you got to make it 6. Even if you have a 20-second lead, you're going to make it 21. And then at the end of the day, whichever boat got the MOD, the biggest margin of the day, got beers bought for him.
I love it. I love it. It's something new. We've done 400 podcasts. We never heard about the MOD.
MOD.
So I think that's what Charlie Brenneman and I were trying to, we were trying to get some margin on you on that last run.
I like that you played dirty, though. That was good.
We had no choice. Once you said you were a world champion rower, we had no choice. There was one moment behind your back we were going to have Charlie tackle you and wrestle you to the ground.
Yeah, I would have given in really easily.
All right, so Brown, you're crushing it. How's it feel?
Well,
I mean, life must be good.
No, life was good. I mean, it was stressful though because you're always trying to stay on top, and I was always feeling lesser than because.
But so is Tom Brady. I mean, that's probably what made you as good as you are.
I mean, I think that definitely helped. I could never be complacent, and I just remember. The indoor training was the toughest for me because it was all about weights and it was all about the ERG score, the rowing machine scores. So I was at a big disadvantage when you have to take your body on the water versus just putting on a stationary machine. It's a big difference. You got to carry that weight on the water. But I just would focus on making my numbers, my scores as best as they possibly could be and try to hunt down the big guys and get as close as I could.
So now you're a senior year, you're graduating.
Well, yeah. So actually, junior. So it was interesting. The guy who recruited me, Steve Gladstone, he recruited me hard, and he liked lightweight strokes, like rhythm setters. And then he left after my freshman year. So then my freshman coach was a little bit more excited, I think, about the bigger crews. So I had a rough go after that. I had to fight my way. I was on the JV, then I dropped down to third varsity, then back up to JV. Senior year, I made the varsity. The boat came in fourth at our Eastern Championships, and I get kicked out.
Oh, wow.
Without a seat race, without any kind of – it was just, all right.
So you peaked early.
Yeah, I peaked early, but then in the summer –
Summer after senior year.
No, in the summers during college, I would go row for the lightweight national team.
Copy that.
And go to the world championship. So that was like my high. I actually used my training at Brown to just get myself as fit as possible for the national team.
Got it.
Because that really was my ultimate goal, was to go to the Olympics and in the lightweight rowing category. So,
and how's Dad and Grandpa feeling through this whole thing?
Oh, Dad and Grandpa are awesome. They're really excited. My Grandpa was funny. He didn't understand that I was rowing for the national team for, years after graduating college. So he's like, when are you done with this rowing thing? Like he still thought I was, he thought it was kind of silly. I was still rowing because he thought it was college or he was confused, but
like, go get a real job.
Yeah, basically. Right. And get a haircut. That's, he used to give me $5 for a haircut. And first of all, it was hilarious because, I'm not cutting my hair, Pops. And second of all, a haircut costs like $20 in those days. So anyway.
So you graduate and you're picking up steam on the national team.
Yeah, national team. I trained for 3 years after college, going to the world championships and –
Olympics seems like a reality.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I was one of 12, 16 guys that were in the hunt for 6 spots. And in 99, I switched from one oar rowing, sweep rowing, to sculling, which is 2 oars. Because in that boat, it wasn't decided by the camp. It was decided by who's fastest. But it's almost like switching from road biking to mountain biking.
Sure.
It's a change. And I think I overestimated how big that change was, or underestimated how big the change was, and the writing was on the wall. End of '99, and I was like, "I'm gonna take some time off."
How's that? Let's go back to that exact moment. Like, you're sitting in your bedroom, you're playing Captain and Tennille, and you're crying, or like what? Like that moment of making that decision.
I had a that was a really rough year. I went to switch to sculling. I missed out on the world championship sculling boat, the 4-man quad, by, half a second or something to some guy that was way more experienced, but give me another 3 months. And, it was one of those things. And then I jumped in a double with another guy, and we were both desperate to try to do something and didn't make that. And I just remember calling the national sweep coach, the one oar, saying, "Hey, I've been in the 8 for 3 years. Can I come back and have a shot?" And he's like, "Look, I got my boat." And then I remember calling my sister from a payphone asking her to come pick me up.
That's that moment. That's the exact moment, the payphone.
Yeah. And I was in some shitty mall in Jersey, and I was like, "Yeah, I need. I'm done. I think." And then
that's I'm with you at that
moment. So if I start crying, done. Give me tissues.
So most people quit right there, and they just lose motivation. Maybe they get on a downward spiral. What do you do?
Well, I did take some time off because, you know, you're not gonna make the next year. So give yourself a year off and reevaluate. And I started doing triathlon, just taking my engine and doing something different with it. I just decided to finally move to New York and got into some stuff there. Was there for about 2 years. And then moved over to L.A.
What'd you do in L.A.?
L.A. is where I started Indo Row, and I was out there doing like TV commercial stuff and having some fun and surfing and triathlon.
The long hair that you didn't cut because you know is paying off.
It worked out. It worked out pretty well. And then
you start Orange Theory or something.
Well, no, I started this program, indoor rowing program called Indo Row, and it was 50 minutes of rowing, kind of like spinning or indoor cycling on rowing machines, because. Okay. I saw how crazy people were going with that, and I said to myself, well, geez, man, rowing, 9 major muscle groups, full body workout, low impact, super calorie burn. Let's get people on rowers. Let's make it fun, not like the workouts I did in college, and let's, you know, play some music and bring in the experiences that I had racing the Germans and bring it into a studio. So
use your expertise, use your passion.
Yeah. And so I started with 5 rowers, and it was kind of taking off, and people were kind of bitching about prices because they were comparing it to cycling. And I'm like, well, there's only 5 of us. This is like, I'm a rower, and, you know, I'll take good care of you. So we dropped prices. The best kind of business decision I made back in the day was I doubled down. I bought 5 more rowers, dropped prices in half almost, and then started to fill up the
room.
And then we expanded it with my partner, Jay Blonick, who's like a guru in the fitness industry, to about 600 locations.
No kidding.
YMCAs, Equinoxes, small Pilates studios. And that's how I got involved with Orange Theory. Where I'm their key rowing advisor now and an owner of some of the franchises that they have out there and really help with the rowing aspect of it.
That's awesome. That's a good story. Then what? Then this van shows up.
Then the van shows up.
It's called Body Squad.
Body Squad.
What is this thing?
Body Squad is what we all need, especially as we age as athletes, but everybody needs it in terms of helping people move better and feel better through myofascial trigger point assisted stretching. So one-on-one, unlocking key tight points on the body.
Sounds very complicated.
And then moving people through those motions, yeah.
I mean, that's the problem, right? Because people just don't understand.
Yeah. If I said foam rolling on steroids, okay. Right. That's pretty much what it is, and people are like, oh, wow, I do foam rolling. I'm like, yes, imagine now someone who knows what the hell they're doing it to you, taking the thinking and the work out of it and boosting the efficacy so that you can train harder, so that you can sit at a desk without being in chronic pain, so that you can stand on your feet as a chef or a nurse and perform the way you should.
And what's this thing, TechNeck?
TechNeck is something that one of my doctor friends introduced me to when I told him what we were doing. But basically, it's ultimate, like it's a condition and that you get from all the strain from leaning your head forward, from being on your devices, from being hunched over your computers, and it really causes a lot of problems for people: migraines, constant tension, and pain. We had our team work on a 25-year-old programmer at a company called LogMeIn. And he was so messed up, and by the time he left, he was elated because he was out of pain. I'm like, you're 25 years old. You shouldn't be in pain. But they are. They're performing
hard. So it's not only for Olympic-level rowers or combat masters like Charlie Brenneman, but this is for just everybody needs a little bit of myofascia.
Myofascial trigger point work and stretching. And then we also have the infrared saunas, which do an amazing job at helping boost immune system and relaxation, circulation, chronic illness. And then we have the Normatec compression boots, which are getting much more popular from, you know, all the NBA players traveling with their own set to boost their recovery time.
So how do we find one of these Body Squad places?
Well, you're lucky because we're in Boston. And we have 2 studios there, and we also have the squad. We're like the geek squad of the body, where we deploy this van with our team out to companies and corporate wellness programs. And then we're hoping to expand.
I will tell you, for the audience listening, watching, it works. We have them coming into our office. And I think your instinct, if you're listening, is if you're not an Olympic rower, right, or someone, you don't need it.
You don't,
everybody needs it.
Everybody needs it. I mean, my wife is really good at kind of helping to express that everybody is performing at a high level. Our life these days is asking us to perform at a very high level. Look at what we did just yesterday, you know, running around in the car, out of the car, just on the devices, taking calls, traveling. It's a major stress, and just the environmental stress that we have around us puts our body in a place that needs this type of work.
Why don't we end the interview here, and then me and Charlie could get some work done by Josh on our backs and our neck. three key takeaways for those out there that are, whether it's how to keep your body in great condition, how to pivot, because you pivoted, right? Three key takeaways.
All right. Find a moment of pause so that you can refocus, find your direction, and then pursue that direction with ultimate
ferocity.
Yeah, just attack. I think that's one thing that I like to. It's a motto I have, is attack and commit. So if I'm about to do something scared, like whether it's skiing or something, or taking off on a huge wave that I'm not sure about, I just have one word in my head, and it's commit. When we signed a lease to take, you know, the first location, it's commit. And then attack.
You're committed.
Yeah.
You're awesome. Let's have you commit on my shoulders.
I'll get in there.
I love the pause, the refocus, and the attack, right? You think of a tree in the forest. It's going like, I'm growing up here. I don't know. This isn't the best environment I could be in. I'm going to pause. I'm going to take a second. I'm going to find that sunlight. And I'm going to attack and break on through. It's like a good reminder, yeah?
I think we could all use some of that, right? Because sometimes we're going at full speed, but maybe we're not going in the right direction.
Yeah.
So I would not have expected an Olympic level athlete to say, hold on a second, take a time out.
Like they always say, work smart, not hard. We like to work hard and smart. And sometimes to do that, you have to take a second, take a deep breath, and be like, what is my trajectory?
Yep.
And then just go for it.
And then attack it.
Skis down the hill.
Yeah, I forget the podcast we did with that gentleman, but that idea of
Chris Waddell, I think.
Chris Waddell coming out of the gate hard to that, you know, and attacking it like early in the morning. So very similar messages.
You have to match that desire with your talent, right? You really need to have that desire, that drive. Just go for it.
Yeah, you know what? I was wondering, right? Like in sport, actually in business and anything, it's easy to get to like a mediocre level, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a few people that get to a top level. But at some point, how do you squeeze out the extra inch to actually earn gold? And I like what he said, which you were just repeating, this idea of when you have both desire and talent, you've got a chance at gold. But just desire isn't enough, and just talent isn't enough.
Yeah, and you know what? It takes a team, right? Because when you have a team, then it's saying like, hey, you have an accountability. You're not going to quit because like we're here, we're watching you, and we have a shared purpose.
No, it's like, just like doing the podcast today. You said I knew my team was going to be here with the microphones and the camera, and
I'm out of here. And they said you got
to
stay.
I really wanted to go swim across the bay instead, but my team was here, so you guys held me accountable. And for those listening and watching out there, if you're having a tough time getting motivated, running, you're having a tough time doing anything hard, form a team.
Yeah.
Form a team, because when you're with a team, as Josh says, it's hard to back out.
And you can also like keep on challenging yourself. Sometimes when you say you form a team and you compete, you can win, right? But then he talks about his MOD, like that majority by which you win. So keep on pushing yourself to get even better. Even if you're at that top echelon, the more you push, inch by inch, centimeter by centimeter, you get better and you get better. And that's what real competition is.
I agree 100%. And that's probably the difference between gold and silver, right? That ability to squeeze out just a little bit more.
A little bit more.
I don't know what the example would be from your background in the forest, but that little bit extra. makes a difference, right?
I mean, it's easy. Like when you distill it, right? When we take that oregano that we harvest from the high mountains of Sparta and you put it through the distillation process, you start out with a big amount of plant matter. But as you distill it, all of that comes down in just a tiny little extract of oil. And that extract of oil is like the strongest possible thing. So you can either be like wasting all your efforts doing all these different disparate things, or really focus and distill what you're trying to do, and then what you're doing becomes all that more powerful. It's not quality,
I like that. I like that, tying oregano into gold metals.
Yeah, antibacterial.
We talk about diet and fitness with Josh, right?
Yeah.
And I like this idea that everybody should treat themselves like an Olympian.
Yeah.
Like if you're a parent and you're running a household, or you're running a business as a CEO, or even a manager within a company, right? If you're doing anything, why wouldn't you want to be your best?
Yeah. I mean, it's true, because if you think about it, I mean, if you look at back to ancient times and modern times, I mean, certainly people in ancient times are always busy facilitating their basic needs of food, fire, shelter, water. But within our modern times, we're all just playing to a different game, playing to a different level where a lot more is expected of you a lot faster. And so anything that you're doing in life, is that anything that you do is worth being done well. So just, you should hold yourself to a standard.
Hold yourself to an Olympic standard, no matter who you are, no matter what level you're playing at in life. Treat yourself like an Olympian.
Treat yourself like an Olympian, and then those around you rise up to Mount Olympus. But don't forget to pause.
We're playing for gold.
To refocus. We're playing for gold.
Hey, we want to hear from you how you're going to turn yourself into an Olympian. I want to know what's holding you back, what that gap is between playing average and playing pro.
Yeah, we'll help you out.